Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Hello, everybody, and happy summer solstice. Longest day of the year, about 15 hours of daylight. I remember when I was a kid, and it felt like such freedom to be able to stay outside and play until 8:30, 9 o'clock this time of year. Wow, what a high. Did you have that experience? Then you grow up and you can stay outside anyway, even if it's dark. So what? But it's still great to have all this daylight, right? And we even get some sunny days around the solstice after a drenching May and June, so enjoy it out there. And later in the show, we have a summer solstice special. Today is also Make Music New York Day. Impromptu orchestras will be out and about throughout the city to make music. Did you know that? And we're going to get in on the fun with the first ever Brian Lehrer Show on-air orchestral quartet. So we are looking for four musicians among you to join us at around 11:40 this morning, New York time, to play a version of Summertime, George Gershwin's Summertime. Any instrument can audition, cello, saxophone, kazoo, whatever. If you know Summertime and you want to join in, email blshow@wnyc.org, blshow@wnyc.org. and put Make Music in the subject line. We'll be back in touch with four of you because we have four lines that we can use at once. That's our max. And we'll send you a little more information and see if you actually want to do it. All right? We'll see how this works. If you want to participate, email blshow@wnyc.org with Make Music in the subject line, and we'll pick our four musicians to be part of the Make Music New York on-air orchestral quartet at around 11:40 this morning. That should be great. The stock market, not so great. Down more than 500 points on the Dow the last 2 days after Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke signals a slowdown on the way in his quantitative easing government bond buying binge. Since you're probably confused about many of these machinations, let's get your questions answered on the Bernanke mini crash. Call us if you need some of this explained at 212-433-WNYC. 433-9692. As we welcome today's Secretary of Explaining Stuff, Reuters finance blogger Felix Salmon. Hiya, Felix. Happy summer.
Happy solstice day. I'm loving the sunshine.
Indeed. And let's begin with a little Fed speak. This is Ben Bernanke himself. And I'll set this up with the thought, now, does this actually sound so extreme? Listen.
Today, the committee reaffirmed its expectation that the current exceptionally low range for the funds rate will be appropriate at least as long as the unemployment rate remains above 6.5%, so long as inflation and inflation expectations remain well-behaved in the census described in the FOMC statement.
Well, for one thing, Felix, that sounds kind of ordinarily gray in the kind of language he used, as Federal Reserve chairs are known to do. And it also sounded kind of cautious. Exceptionally low range for the funds rate will be appropriate at least as long as the unemployment rate remains above 6.5%, so long as inflation and inflation expectations remain well behaved. That doesn't sound like, hey, I'm stepping out there and doing something bold and outrageous. But what did it really mean?
Well, yes, you're absolutely right. What he was saying, the message that you would have got from him if you listened to him and spoke Fed chair, which those of us who do speak Fed chair got, was what's known as dovish. He was saying, listen, unemployment is still high. We're going to keep on buying bonds so long as unemployment is high. We're going to keep interest rates at zero so long as unemployment is high. So there's nothing to worry about. And then, of course, when they got this message, the markets freaked out. And the reason that the markets freaked out was not because he changed anything, but just because he started talking about maybe at some point in the future he might not be quite as accommodative. He might not be throwing quite as much money from helicopters onto the economy as he has been up until now.
And for that, the world markets go into a tizzy?
And for that, the world markets go into a tizzy. I mean, to be fair, they've, you know, basically just dropped in a couple of days what they rose in the past couple of months. They're still at relatively high levels. People are saying, oh, look how high, you know, long-term interest rates are. The 10-year Treasury is at 2.4-something percent. But in the grand scheme of things, 2.4-something percent on the 10-year Treasury bond is still a very, very low yield. We're just kind of moving a little bit back towards what I call sensible. I call this the reversion to sensible trade.
And the Dow is still up 12% from the beginning of the year, just since January 1st. So it's not like this is October 1929. So Bill in Brooklyn has a question. Hi, Bill. You're on WNYC.
Yeah. Hi. Thanks for the call.
You made the call.
Gold and bonds have dropped so precipitously. About a year ago, gold was $1,800 an ounce. Why and what could the future look like?
Thank you. And, you know, Felix, and I know you were trying to explain this on your blog, if stocks are going down, the usual hedges against stocks like gold and bonds are supposed to be going up. But everything's going down.
Everything's going down. Everything's being repriced. Basically, what we had was this world where everything was artificially overvalued because money just wasn't worth as much anymore because the Fed was printing so much of it. And now the Fed is saying, we're going to stop printing money, and so money is going to be worth more in the future, and that means that prices come down. And that applies to all prices, whether it's stocks or bonds or gold. But gold in particular is a very, very odd asset because it doesn't really have any intrinsic value. It's just this kind of, atavistic fear trade. If you're afraid that the world is going to blow up, then you buy gold for safety. And I guess if gold is coming down, then that, again, is what I'm calling the reversion to normal, the reversion to sensible. We realize that the world is not going to come to an end, so we don't need to take solace and safe haven in a shiny metal with no actual practical use.
All right. Who else has a question about the Bernanke mini crash? Call in and ask our Secretary of Explaining Stuff for today, Reuters finance blogger Felix Salmon. I'm sorry we couldn't get Bill Clinton. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Here's one of my questions. Which interest rates are going up and which are not? Because I'm certainly not seeing it in my savings account.
Yes, it's the borrowers who are paying more, not the savers. All interest rates are going up, but they're going up from zero to slightly more than zero. So you're not going to really see this, as you say, in your savings account. If you tried to take out a mortgage right today, you would have to pay a significantly higher rate than if you tried to take out a mortgage, a couple of months ago. So those rates are going up. If you're a big corporation and you want to borrow money, it's going to cost you a lot more. Or significantly more. If you look at, like, for instance, about a month ago, Apple borrowed a bunch of money at incredibly low rates, and anyone who bought those bonds then is looking a bit foolish right now because they could buy them now for, 90 cents on the dollar. So if you're a borrower, rates are coming up, again, not to high levels, but to just slightly less low levels. But we're nowhere near the point at which savers are celebrating and going, oh, wow, compound interest. We're still at low enough rates that nothing is compounding.
When will I be able to return to the old normal and get 4 or 5% on a savings account?
Oh, that would be wonderful. I mean, that would mean we were having a really healthy economy again. That would mean we're completely back to normal. We have economic growth. We have low unemployment. And maybe even a bit of inflation, which would be useful to help deflate away some of the massive debts that we have. But I don't think we're going to be reaching that for many, many years to come.
Jim in Morris Township, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jim, you have a question?
Yeah, I was wondering, Bernanke was speaking in the long range, but the market thinks only in the short range. The market really doesn't. I mean, it probably considers the long range, but the short range is definitely predominant. So no matter what he says about the long range, which may be better, the market short circuits him by acting on the short range considerations, and I guess whether it benefits in the short range from whatever's going on.
Well, Jim, thank you. And I think there's a wonderful Secretary of Explaining Stuff question embedded in there as an assumption, which is that the market's price in the short range. Is that true? If investors, even if computer-programmed investors, are buying stock in Company X, does it mean it's because they think they're going to have a good third quarter, or does it mean it's because they think they're going to go up over the next 5 years?
It's an excellent question. And there's two different short ranges which the market works on. One is the ultra short range of like a few milliseconds or less than 1 second. And most of the trading on the stock market these days is people buying stocks, you know, or selling stocks and then exiting that position within a few seconds. That's the kind of crazy short-range trading that we're seeing a huge amount of these days. It's called high-frequency trading. But then the other kind of short-range, which is more embedded in the question, is that if Ben Bernanke comes out and says, you know what, at the end of the year or maybe next year, I'm going to ease off the accelerator a little bit, then what the markets do is they think to themselves, well, when he does that, Where should the Treasury bond be? Where should stock prices be? And then what they do is they immediately sell off today to the price where they think it's going to be in, you know, a year's time, because they don't want to just lose money over the course of that time. And so if they anticipate that stocks are going to fall in a year's time, they will sell the stocks today, and so it becomes sort of self-fulfilling and you get the big drop today rather than in a year.
Here's another of my questions. Why does Bernanke want to put on the brakes with only 2% growth? I think that's what we've been having this year, something like 2% growth. 2% growth is pathetic by historic standards. 2% growth isn't even enough to reduce unemployment below 7%. It's certainly not enough to grow our way out of the national debt and afford the baby boomers' retirement, the nation's biggest financial challenge. We envy China growing at 7 or 8 or 10%. Why 2% growth? And he puts on the brakes.
Okay, so this is where I need to channel Bernanke a little bit. He was asked this question in various different ways at his press conference, and he kept on saying, and it's worth reiterating, hey, guys, I'm not putting on the brakes. I'm not putting on the brakes. I'm not even easing up on the accelerator. We have 7.6% unemployment, and I'm going to keep my foot heavily on the accelerator so long as unemployment is above 7%, which it's well above 7% right now. And I'm not even going to think about putting on the brakes until it goes down to 6.5%. And even then, I might not put on the brakes. I might say that other things mean that I have to keep my foot off the brakes. So no one is putting on the brakes, not yet, and not until the economy is looking significantly healthier than it does now.
So he's saying that. You're saying that. You understand that. And yet the markets are going, OMG.
I know. The markets are twitchy these days. But the reason that the markets are twitchy is just because they were in this crazy world where nothing made sense. And what Bernanke is saying is that he foresees some future world where maybe things might start making sense again. And they say, oh, dear, because we've been pricing things to crazy, and we're going to have to at some point reprice to sensible. And so that's why they're twitchy.
And here is another example of just how cautious he was. He's even trying to draw a distinction between thresholds and triggers. Yawn. How cautious he was trying to be in his Fed speak, Ben Bernanke.
The economic conditions we have set out as preceding any future rate increase are thresholds, not triggers. For example, assuming that inflation is near our objective at that time, as expected, a decline in the unemployment rate to 6.5% would not lead automatically to an increase in the federal funds rate target, but rather would indicate only that it was appropriate for the committee to consider whether the broader economic outlook justified such an increase.
Felix, it wouldn't make us do anything. It would only make us consider whether it was right to do something. Yawn and double yawn.
Exactly. This is he's being as careful as he can. He's saying, listen, I'm not putting on the brakes yet. And even when unemployment is lower, much lower than it is now, I'm still not going to put on the brakes necessarily. I'm just going to maybe start thinking about putting on the brakes.
Sure.
And that, as you say, is enough to panic the markets.
George on the Upper West Side, you're on WNYC. Hi, George.
Good morning. I've been a lifelong investor in the equities market since I was a teenager. I'm now in my 60s, and about 2 months ago, in anticipation of what went on, I began to liquidate my holdings to have more and more cash. I remain very concerned that we still have lots of other shoes to drop. While the issues of what the Fed has been doing in terms of QEs 1, 2, and 3 may very well help prop up the market, even with the panic that just went on the other day, you have virtually every other central bank of the world doing the same thing. And if one of them slips up, they're not all as smart or as historically oriented as Bernanke, you could see a major inflation start pretty soon.
Do you also have a question?
I do. The question I have is, since I'm now sitting here trying to figure out what to do with all this money, what does Mr. Salmon see as possible areas one should watch as areas of activity and growth which might make sense for an investment perspective?
So does this change, to the extent that it is a change, signal that it's good for certain sectors, bad for certain sectors?
So let me just quickly talk about the other central banks there. You're absolutely right that there are other central banks, and they're important, and especially if you look at what the Chinese central bank is doing right now, that could cause a significant slowdown of growth in China. There's something of a credit crunch in China right now, and obviously if China slows down substantially, then that's going to have global repercussions. But the risks here are absolutely not inflation. The risks are growth. The risk is that the entire world is just not going to grow as fast as it could and should be growing. As for where to put your money, I cannot help you on that one. Sorry. I never have and never will give investment advice. And by the way, no one else can really help you either. This is, we're in a world where nothing really makes sense. My ex-boss, Nouriel Roubini, calls it the new abnormal. That, you know, things have been weird and things are going to be weird, and the assets which rise and the assets which fall are not going to be the ones which you would probably expect to in any given situation.
So last question. Was this recent surge in the Dow to 15,000 a bubble artificially caused by Ben Bernanke and the Fed?
It was fueled by Ben Bernanke and the Fed. I'm hesitant to use the word bubble because bubble implies that there was a kind of speculative momentum trade going on there where people were buying stocks just to sell them to a greater fool. And I didn't really see that happening so much. But yes, I mean, there's no doubt that the amount of money that the Fed printed helped to fuel not only bond prices but also stock prices.
Felix Salmon, Reuters finance blogger for today, our secretary of explaining stuff on the Ben Bernanke mini crash. Thank you very much. More clarity as a result. Thanks. Thanks, Felix.
Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, the New York State Legislature approves a referendum on casino gambling and shows how fragile abortion rights are, even in New York. We'll talk to the leader of the Democrats in the state Senate. Stay with us.